So we're going to learn, our learning should be a merit for the Refor Shleima for Yaakov ben Sima. He should have a full recovery. Okay, so it's this week's parasha is...
Jonathan, if you don't mind, can I throw my mother in there?
100%, yeah.
What's we'll be about the war. She's in the hospital. Hopefully she'll be out tomorrow, but thank you.
So give me the name again.
Zahava
Batavar. Zahava Batavar. Sure. For Shleim, also one I guess I'll throw one more in, is Chayesar Bat Miriam. Okay. So now, this week's parasha coming up is Kedoshim. And it's an amazing parasha. It's one of those packed with, it's just full of incredible things. There are different mitzvot that are brought up here, but I want to just focus on the first, because it says here, it says, speak to the entire congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Right? So we should be holy. Why? Because God's holy. So we should emulate Hashem. The question is, what does it mean to be holy? So again, Hebrew is kedoshim tiyu, kadosh, kadosh, kedusha. So it's translated as holiness. So, but what does it mean to be holy? So Rashi here, as I'm showing you here in the text brought down in Chabad.org. So it says like this: separate yourselves from sexual immorality and from sin. For wherever one finds a barrier against sexual morality, one finds holiness. Right? So it's anytime you see where it says, be careful, set up guardrails. Rashi says, Shatamotze, Geder Erva. You should say, right? So there, any type of sexual morality, Motze Kedusha. But in the context of that, you'll find Kedusha, holiness. So like the examples Rashi gives, for example, they, and he puts in parentheses, the Kohanim shall not take in marriage a woman who is a prostitute or one who is profaned. So Isha Zona V'chala, and then it says there, I, the Lord, who sanctified you, am holy. And also another example, and he shall not profane his offspring. I am the Lord who sacrifices him, and they shall be holy. So again, like any time that it brings up sexual issues, it seems to finish off by saying that this idea of the idea of Kedusha, of holiness. Now it's funny, but the idea of how do you say prostitute in biblical Hebrew is Kedesha. So the idea of Kedusha actually is the idea of being dedicated, to dedicate something. To have a dedicated line, like we used to have dedicated fax lines, right? Like, which is kind of like, what is that? But the idea of Kedusha is to have something that's set aside specific for this. That's why when we talk about marriage, there's different stages in the marriage process. But in the marriage process, we have this idea of Kedushin. And the idea is that now we're saying that this person... this is dedicated to this person to the exclusion of all others. That's Kedusha. Same thing for Shabbos. Like Shabbos is a holy day. It's set aside. It's unique and specific to like the idea of as opposed to the other days. So like any type of like process of Kedusha, of holiness, is setting something and dedicating it. And so here what Rashi's saying though, that many times when you find this idea of Kedusha, it's in the context of things related to sexuality and sexual immorality and sin. So according to Rashi's understanding is that when it says holy, it means within the context of how we conduct ourselves in the area of sexuality. Okay? Now Rashi has our beautiful, everything is always, you have Rashi's opinion, but then Ramban actually says something different. What does Ramban say? So Nachmanides here, he says, so he first he quotes, now Nachmanides, what's interesting is Rashi lives in the year, like let's say the period of the year 1000 to 1100. Ramban Nachmanides comes at the end of the 12 and then into the 1300s. He had seen Rashi, sees Maimonides, Rambam, Ibn Ezra. He gets to see all these earlier commentaries. And then he himself writes a monumental Perush, a commentary on the Torah. And really, it's a very fundamental Perush, commentary on Torah. And so he says like this. First, he says, "You shall be holy. Abstain from the forbidden sexual relations mentioned in the preceding section and from other sin. Because wherever you find in the Torah a warning to guard against immorality, you find the mention of holiness." This is Rashi's language. Right? So the first thing he does, he comes out of the gate, he quotes Rashi for us. Now, just as a side, Rashi, I was looking at, let's say, there are different super commentaries to Rashi, and one of the comments that they make is that contextually, and it's interesting, Rashi, the way he says it here, the way we just read, is that he's just looking at the context of where I see Kedusha, where the Torah talks about holiness, it's in the context of sexual issues. But others explain that Rashi's also looking, if you pan out and you look at the end of last week's parsha, it's talking about sexual, the sexual, you know, where it's a problem of immorality. And so, and then it comes into this, be holy. So Rashi perhaps also, the way the Gorarie Maral explains, and you see it a little bit here subtly, because Rashi, right there, Ramban is quoting Rashi, he says here, abstain from the forbidden sexual relations mentioned in the preceding section, right? So now that again, it's interesting. He, in a way, I guess the commentary here is throwing that in. Let me just see. I'm just curious if, right. So that's really more of the footnote in a way, right? Because the way that the Ramban's text is, Kedoshim to you, have you prushim and arayas from an avera, shakomakum shatar motzi gedar arva. Okay, so that's, so actually the person, whoever wrote the English translation, is mentioning it. He's kind of throwing that in, which is kind of interesting that he said, so explained in Gorari on Rashi. So the English translation, whoever wrote this translation, saw the Gorari, which I was just quoting, and he kind of subtly puts it in this little parentheses or brackets, and that's like very subtly saying, you know where Rashi got that from? From, you know, perhaps he's getting it from the fact that it, from what came earlier in the last week's parasha. The problem I would say with that, I would say, is that perhaps when Rashi, you see the examples that Rashi quoted, he wasn't necessarily saying it comes from what was stated earlier, but either way, we'll leave it alone. Okay, so this is Rashi's language. But in the Torah Koham, now this is Nachmanides, I have seen it mentioned without any qualification, i.e. without any particular reference to morality, as Rashi expressed it, saying, be self-restraining. So what does it mean to be holy? Ramban Nachmanides is saying, I'm not sure it's necessarily limited to the sexual issues. Similarly, the rabbi is taught here, there, and ye shall sanctify yourselves, and ye be holy, for I am holy. Just as I am holy, so be you holy. Just as I am pure, so be you pure. It's a little bit not exactly modern English, but fine. In my opinion, this absence does not refer only to the restraint from acts of immorality, as the rabbi Rashi wrote, but it is rather the self-control mentioned throughout the Talmud, which confers upon those who practice it in the name of the Pharisees, literally, those who are separated from the self-indulgence, as will be explained, and for those who practice self-restraint. The meaning thereof is as follows. The Torah has admonished us against immorality and forbidden foods, but permitted sexual intercourse between man and his wife and the eating of certain meat and wine. If so, a man of desire could consider this to be a permission to be passionately addicted to sexual intercourse with his wife or many wives and be among wine barbers, among gluttonous eaters of flesh, and speak freely all profanities, since this prohibition has not been expressly mentioned in the Torah, and thus he'll become a sordid person without any within the permissible realm of the Torah. So this is the idea of to be a menuvel versus a Torah. So basically, what are we saying? you could take all the laws, perform them to the letter, and not be holy, because you can take that, the parameters that were given to you, and then take them and completely overdo it, even though letter of the law speaking, it's 100% permitted, but you would basically be, you know, I can eat kosher, but I eat, you know, ridiculous amounts of food, or I have relations with people that are permitted to me, but you overdo it. So the idea of what the Ramban Nachmanides understands is that what does it mean to be holy? It actually means to take and to actually be holy within the framework of that which is permitted. Meaning, therefore, after having listed the matters which he prohibited altogether, Scripture followed them by a general command that we practice moderation even in matters which are permitted, such as in the following. One should minimize sexual intercourse, similar to that which the rabbis have said, so that the disciples of the sages should not be found together with their wives as often as the hens, and they should not engage in it except as required in fulfillment of the commandment thereof. He should also sanctify himself to self-restraint by using wine in small amounts, just as the scripture calls a Nazirite holy for abstaining from wine and strong drink. And he should remember the evils which the Torah mentioned as following from drinking wine in the cases of Noah and Lot, who both, so like the excessive drinking, where one would get drunk, so even if it's all permissible wine, right? But the idea is that everything in excess is also a problem. Similarly, he should keep himself away from the impurity of in this his ordinary daily activity, even though we have not been admonished against in the Torah, similar to that which the rabbis have said, for the Purushim, the clothes of the unlearned are considered as if trodden upon by a Zav or Zava, a man or woman having suffered a flux. And just as the Nazirite is called holy because of guarding himself from the impurity of the dead, likewise, he should guard his mouth and tongue from being defiled by excessive food and by lewd talk, similar to what the scripture states, and every mouth speaketh wantonness. It's like, again, this translation is a little bit not as much modern English, but we're fine. But the idea that we're seeing here within Nachmanides is that he should purify himself in respect until he reaches the degree known as complete self-restraint. As the rabbi said concerning Rav Chiya, that never in his life did he engage in unnecessary talk. So whereas Rashi saying that what kiddushim to you should be holy, is telling us that what? In the geder, in the area, in the arena of sexual relations, one should purify themselves, be holy. Here, Ramban is saying it's much, much broader. It's a broader concept of to be holy is to take things that are kadesh b'mutarlach. It's like take the things that are permitted, and now within that framework, one should be holy in the sense of moderation. Okay? So two different approaches. Now, what's interesting is, if you think about it, so Rashi contextually, and so how do they read the text? Because again, it all comes back to text. So if we just go back one chapter, and it could be that it's a number of chapters here. So right, so here in last week's parasha. So the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. Like the practice of the land of Egypt in which you dwelt, you shall not do. And like the practice of the land of Canaan to which I am bringing you, you shall not do. And you shall not follow their statutes. You shall fulfill my ordinances and observe my statutes to follow them. I am the Lord your God. You shall observe my statutes and my ordinances, which a man shall do and live by them. V'chai b'hem, live, I am the Lord. No man shall come near to any of his close relatives to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord." So you see there, so right here, it goes into the whole issue of the permitted relations and which are not, and the prohibited relations, right? So all this list here of not, of who you, and then that's, and that leads us into where Rashi says, kedoshim to you, in this coming parsha now, after chapter 18, we go into 19, where it says, be holy. So we understand contextually, right, so Rashi says, like, this is all about the issue of permitted or prohibited relations, sexual relations. But here, just a little bit at the back end here. So it says here, talks about homosexuality. It talks about bestiality. And then it says here, you shall not defile yourselves by any of these things, for the nations whom I am sending away from before you have defiled themselves with all these things. And the land became defiled, and I visited this its sin upon it, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. So that basically what's interesting here is, just as a side, the land of Israel has zero tolerance for this type of behavior. So much so that if people conduct themselves improperly when they're in the land of Israel, eventually it will lead to expulsion. And then, but as for you, you shall observe my statutes and my ordinances, and you shall not do like any of these abominations, neither the native nor the stranger who sojourns among you. For the people of the land who preceded you did all of these abominations, and the land became defiled. And let the land not vomit you out for having defiled it, as it vomited out the nations that preceded you. For anyone who commits any of these abominations, the persons doing so shall be cut off from the midst of their people. And then it says, and you shall observe my charge not to commit any of the abominable practices that were done before you, and you shall not become defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. Okay, so this is the preceding chapter. And then it leads us into be holy. So Rashi, first, I think in general, sees a theme of that when it comes to Kedusha, when it comes to being holy, it is in this context and relating to sexuality. And then Ramban is saying, not necessarily is it limited to that, but rather it's a broader thing of moderation. Because, when we sit down and we just open up the book, so to speak, and we look at the text and we understand, that there's themes that are being conveyed, so then Ramban will say, it's true that it's about sexuality, I see that, but there's also more that's going on. Because it also goes into the ways of the people of Egypt, and the ways of the people that are in the land of Israel that are prior to, and the Canaanites that are there, and how they conducted themselves. And so, Ramban then looks at it and says, it's a broader theme that's being conveyed here, the idea of moderation. Okay? So those are the first two. Now, I wanted to look at...
Jonathan?
Yeah.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
So Rashi clearly, or maybe not so clearly, but we're told that he's taking this from the parsha before it. Where is Rambam getting his thing about moderation from?
Okay, so let's see. Hold on. So let's go back to his text, because you'll see.
He quotes it, right? He says something.
No, so let's look at it again. So here he says in the Tar Kohanim, which is Medrash. But it's early Medrash. Tar Kohanim is coming from early Medrash. I have seen it mentioned without any qualification that it's not limited to the sexual morality. Be self-restraining. Right? But similarly, the rabbis taught there, ye shall sanctify yourselves and ye be holy, for I am holy. So the idea of we should be holy because God's holy is not limited. He's saying it's just based on where we see the idea of Kedusha, of holiness, is not limited to just this one segment. And in my opinion, this abstinence does not refer only to restraint from acts of immorality, sexual morality, as Rashi wrote, but it is rather self-control mentioned throughout the Talmud, which again talks about this idea of to be separated, Kedusha. Now, I just realized also, Ramban is saying like this, so there's a famous teaching of Rav Pinchas ben Yair. So Pinchas ben Yair was the son-in-law of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, right? So Rav Shimon bar Yochai, he's connected to the idea of Kabbalah, the of the Zohar, or his teachings, and the idea of Lag BaOmer also. So it talks about how Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the Gemara and Shabbos on Lamed Gimel tells us that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had to run away because he had mentioned, he had said certain negative things about the Romans, ends up hiding in a cave for 12 years, and then he comes out and then has to go back for 12 months. But when he comes out of the cave, after being there for 12 years, his body didn't look healthy. And it says that his son-in-law, Pinchas Ben Yair, was there to greet him. And but there was Rav Shimon Yochai from that experience really ends up becoming like emblematic of the teacher of the hidden secrets of Torah. And that when he dies, that's why Lag BaOmer becomes a big deal, is that he uncovers these hidden secrets of the Torah. But Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, he has a teaching about different levels of growth, and in that it ends up becoming the basis of a famous book called the Mesilas Yesharim, the path of the Yesharim, I guess, is the straight, or let's say, so I'll bring it up here. I just want to show you that it's the basis of that book is based on the teaching of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. So now, Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, the Mesilas Yesharim, which is written by the Ramchal, let me just bring it up here. This whole basis is, it starts on this teaching of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, which makes reference to the idea of Kedusha. So let me just pull it up here. Let me see if I can find it. In the right place or not. Let's see. Hold on a second. Okay. Okay, here we go, Jewish thought. Where is that book that I'm looking for? Sorry that I didn't open it up before. Oh, it's not there. Hold on one second. Ah, here we go. All right. There we go. Okay, let's see how it's sharp. There it is. Okay. So Ramchal lived in the 1600s. He wrote a number of very important books, this being one of them. He died very young. But in this Mesilas Yesharim, okay, here we go. So he quotes from here, Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair derived, and quoting the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So he says, what? Torah brings to watchfulness. Watchfulness brings to zeal. Zeal brings to cleanliness. Cleanliness brings to separation. Right? And then separation brings to purity. Purity brings to piety. Piety brings to humility. Humility brings to fear of sin. Fear of sin brings to holiness. And then from holiness, it brings you to the Holy Spirit, to Ruach HaKodesh, and the Holy Spirit brings to the revival of the dead, to Tchias HaMeisim. So this teaching of Pinchas Ben Yair, so you see that what it brings us to, all of these steps of Torah brings us to being carefulness, brings us to being like running to do things, Zerizos, and then a certain type of cleanliness. I don't think it means like to be clean, but more on a spiritual level. And then to be separated, and then purity, piety, humility, fear of sin, maybe also a type of awe, but brings us to holiness. Okay, so to have that teaching, now, the funny thing is Ramchal is coming way after Ramban, but Nachmanides is seeing this Gemara in Avodah Zarah, right? And he's saying, but for me, my understanding of Kedusha is more in line with Rav Pinchas Ben Yair's teaching here, right? Here he's coming from a Gemara, right? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where Rav Pinchas Ben Yair's teaching is coming from, so that Ramban Nachmanides is seeing, right? So he's coming here and he's looking at Kedoshim to you, and he's saying, can't be just limited to this idea of sexual morality. It's got to be bigger. And if anything, the teaching of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, now Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is coming from the time of the Mishnah. So that's, you know, we're talking way, you know, this is the year, let's say, it's 1,000 years before Rashi, okay? So there, this, you know, and Rav, so that teaching, Ramban is looking at this and saying, I understand what Rashi's saying. It makes sense, but it can't be limited to just that. I think it's a broader, it has to be applied more broadly, okay? Now, if you go, you know, down the line, so I want to show you one other idea that's brought down by Rabbeinu Bachai. Now, Rabbeinu Bachai, he comes a little bit after Ramban, not a little, but he's already a student of, he's coming from the I would call it the school, the broader school of Nachman, he's a Ramban, and his parish on Chumash is interesting in the sense that what he does is he gives an intro to each parsha. And he'll take up a verse from Proverbs, from King Solomon's Proverbs, which is very hard to, like, you have to really work, you have to have help in terms of understanding what's being conveyed. And he takes something and he says, okay, this is what this parsha is about. So when it comes to Kedoshim to you, there's a very fascinating intro, which I just want to look at a little bit of. You could spend a whole class on just on this intro. So he quotes the pasuk. The verse here says, "Tavaniya te'arav l'nefesh, v'tovat kisilim sormira. Desire realized is sweet for the soul. It is an abomination to the wicked to abandon evil." Now let's see what he says. So he says, in this verse, Solomon warns man not to give in to his various physical urges, but to suppress them and to vanquish them. Anyone who succeeds in banishing his physical urges is considered on the spiritual level of an angel. Conversely, anyone who encourages his physical urges and wants to indulge them is on the spiritual level of an animal. When we take a look at the creatures created on the sixth day of creation, we find that all the creatures created prior to man can be divided into two groups, abstract intelligences, and number two is creatures bound to earth by their bodies. So like the abstract intelligences, the first group is comprised of the angels, creatures which are totally disembodied, divorced from anything material. They're not physical. Whereas the second group, such as the trees and the other kinds of vegetation, as well as living creatures are all composed of matter, totally devoid of intelligence. Each of the two categories of creatures performs the tasks allotted to them by their creator, the former group using their intelligence, the latter using their instinct. Both these groups are not free agents, but have to obey the instructions received from their creator, using either their natural instincts or their God-given intelligence, but neither being overtly interfered with. Okay, so what does that mean? So basically, both the physical beings and these angelic beings have no free will. They were given kind of like a playbook. This is what you got to do. And they have no choice in the matter. They're basically There is no free will. It follows that on the sixth day, a third category of creature was created, one which represents a blend of the previous two. It was a creature which embodied both intelligence similar to the disembodied angels, and at the same time is made up of a body and responds to natural urges similar to the animals. This category of creatures was the human species. Man is not dominated either by the dictates of his intelligence or those of his natural urges. The principal difference between man and other creatures is that he possesses willpower, i.e., he has decisions made by him are free-willed, right? So he has this idea of, we call it bechira. He can choose. He has the power to choose. If he is circumspect, he can successfully overcome the natural urges he has in common with the animals. In that event, he frees himself of the influence exerted upon him by the physical raw material he is made of. If he fails to resist the urges which result from his being made up of physical matter, he negates the intelligence of his intelligence, the element which makes him similar to the angels. As long as Adam did not sin, and as a result became enmeshed in the urges common to animals, he was a true angel of the Lord, although possessed of a body. So before the eating of from the tree, man existed on a plane where he really was on a level of really closer to the side of the, let's say, the disembodied, as he calls it, angelic type of being. He was all intelligence, unblemished. As a result, he was fit to live forever. Okay, so this idea that it was only after he ate from the tree that death came into the picture, similar to the angels who reside in the celestial regions. He had been placed in the Garden of Eden, the choicest location on earth. So what happened? Seeing that he did sin, decided to respond to physical urges, he was deprived of the intelligence which had covered him like a garment and was dressed in earth-grown material. As a result, he was expelled from the Garden of Eden and given herbs as food similar to the animals. This is the meaning of Genesis 3:18, "You shall eat the herbs of the field." Prior to that, he had been eating fruit grown on trees, products of plantings by God's own hand. Keeping in mind how Adam was demoted himself, either he was or he did himself, we must realize that it is to our advantage to break the hold that these natural urges have on us, something which if achieved, is terav lenefesh, sweet for the soul. Solomon speaks of greed and similar instincts which, if they have been broken, conquered by man, are something sweet and pleasant for man's intellectual faculties. So now, going just holding it there for a second. So just looking back at this, at the verse, right? So it said, so tava, desire, niya, realized, is so now. So when we say that realized niya, so he explains here, niya in that verse, an unusual word, is similar to the construction to Daniel, niyesi v'nichlesi, I was broken up and ill. We also have similar word, hine yad Hashem hoya. Here, the Lord's hand is about to break. Solomon urges man to break the hold these natural instincts have over him, seeing that they are evil. The Torah already told us that such urges are evil. Kietzer, right, for the instinctive urges man's heart is exposed to are evil ever since his early years. Seeing that the person who does break the prison walls represented by the urges is in effect distancing himself from evil, Solomon adds that abandoning evil is something abominable in the eyes of the fools. So the meaning the fools look at it as bad. Whatever is pleasant for the soul is by definition an abomination for the body, the home of these baser instincts of man. So it is well known fact that he who allows himself to follow these base instincts is thereby violating all the Torah's precepts. So basically, what we're saying is that to follow your instincts is not a good thing, right? So in essence, so now we are like now just taking a step back. So here is Rabbeinu B'chai giving us an introduction to this week's parsha of Kedoshim to be holy. And what he's basically taking us down, this like, here you have man, which is comprised of both these two, like basically contradictory forces, right? You have the force of the physical, desire for pleasure. And then you have the flip side where you have the soul, the angelic, the, you know, the way, the idea of the non-physical, and they're both competing. They're really playing for to who's gonna take control. So now there. So then he says here, it's well known. It's a well known fact that he who allows himself to follow these base instincts in the physical sense is thereby violating all the Torah's precepts. So following. So in a sense, you can already, like, if you think about it, if we stop for a second. We see that this is really following more in the school and the approach of Nachmanides, who says this idea of Kedoshim Tiyu is you want to make yourself holy with that which is permitted to you, in a sense, right? You can find things that you could do, but if you do it in excess, that's already a problem. But here, I mean, again, would you, I mean, how else, you know, do we see like a little bit, I mean, there's, I think there, not, that Rabbeinu B'chai is adding more to this picture. So now he says let's understand, like, there's a little bit more complexity to the idea of following one's base instincts. So he says following one's instincts may be divided into four categories, four levels. One does so theoretically, allowing yourself to feel the urge and be titillated by it. One speaks about these urges, a form of coming closer to giving into them. So one is to think, right, or to feel, allowed to feel the urge. One's to speak about it. One indulges these urges by consuming the object of the temptation with one's mouth, tasting it. So that's kind of like eating something. One abandons one's entire body to the delights offered by such allure. As to fantasizing about sin, Solomon already taught us that such fantasies are culpable as if the sin had actually been committed indeed. So it's interesting, like, it could be worse to already fantasizing, the thought of a sin is could be potentially worse than the actual sin itself, right? Because you think about it, you're eating up the bandwidth, so to speak, of your mind and your energies with those fantasies, which could be obviously very negative in terms of what we can do with ourselves in a positive sense. So in Proverbs 15:13, he told us that a happy heart makes for a cheerful face, whereas a sad heart causes a despondent spirit. Solomon did not want to tell us the obvious. Rather, he meant that there is a direct relation between fantasizing about sin and translating the fantasy into practice. Just as the thoughts of the heart influence the body and its appearance, so sinful thoughts influence the organs that which with which these thoughts are carried out. The heart is to those organs what the root of the tree is to its branches. The second category of following one's instincts, speaking about such fantasies, involves such sins as gossiping, character assassination, using foul language. It's forbidden by biblical decree. Solomon refers to it, when he said that the mouth of fools expresses folly. Immediately following that verse, he wrote that the eyes of God are everywhere. They behold the good and the wicked. What Solomon meant was that God pays close attention to the power of speech being abused, as well as to those who use the power judiciously and constructively. God will punish the guilty for those types of things. The prophet Isaiah also castigated people who abused their mouths to speak foul words when he said, God will not spare their youth, for all are ungodly and wicked, and every mouth speaks impiety. So now, within that, so first we had the idea of thought, then the idea of articulation. Now, one of the things is that we just looked at the first line of the parasha, which is saying, be holy. What's interesting is what follows this line. Let's just take a quick look here, just to see. So here we saw this idea that it says be holy. But then it talks about a number, it like gives us a list of things. Every man shall fear his mother and father, meaning be respectful of your parents, observe Shabbos, I'm Lord your God. Then it says, you shall not turn to the to Avodah Zarah, to idol worship. Okay, I am Lord your God. When you, and then it's interesting, it like pivots, and it says, when you're going to bring a Karban Shlamim, which is a unique type of sacrifice, which is a sacrifice that is, in the sense that it's unique, is that instead of it being an Ola, which is completely given to God and burnt, a Shlamim is similar to, Karban Pesach is a type of Shlamim, where part of the worship is that we should eat it. And so here you have a physical, you know, a spiritual act that is comprised of a physical component. You're supposed to eat. It's actually the mitzvah. Part of the sacrifice process is that we need to eat from it. Now, so you know, keep that in mind. So like here it says, be holy, respect your parents, keep Shabbos, don't do idol worship. But then it's got this very interesting thing about you're going to eat. There's a time, you can only do it for a couple of days, and then you have to, you know, either consume it completely or it has to be burnt. You have to have in mind that it's for the proper time, pigel, okay, so that you can't have improper intent. But you see this idea of physical being elevated to spirituality. And so jumping back, let's just look, keep going with this Rabbeinu Bachai, is this idea of, you know, of also how we speak. And then the third category, eating forbidden things in response to one's instincts, overriding God's laws, is also a violation of a biblical law. Concerning such lapses, David said, your teaching is in my entrails. David congratulated himself that he never fell victim to temptation to fill his entrails with forbidden food. David did not merely refer to food which was forbidden per se, but to gorging himself on permitted food, indulging his appetite instead of eating only in order to meet the requirements of his health. Solomon described a righteous person as someone who eats in order to satisfy his soul, as opposed to his body. In Proverbs, Solomon elaborates further, saying that he who guards his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. And then the fourth category of temptation one may fall victim to is the one involving one's entire body. It concerns indulging one's carnal instincts indiscriminately. There is no need to dwell on the list of incestuous relations the Torah has already outlawed. The temptation is to overindulge in sexual activity with a partner who is officially permitted is what one has to suppress and conquer. Again, so we hear, again, remnants of Nachmanides' teaching. So this concludes the four categories of temptation that the body is exposed to and which it is incumbent upon us to resist. Whence do we know that if someone allows himself to pursue these various pleasures available to the flesh, that he thereby violated the entire Torah legislation? Solomon provided us with the answer to this question when he wrote, a man exclusively concerned with satisfying his desires separates himself from all wisdom, from all Torah. The word nifrad, right, so to separate, alone, abandoned, used in that verse, means that he who pursues physical gratification will find himself isolated, alone. He will lose his friends and companions in the process, as his friends will not want to expose themselves to these temptations. A person guilty of such pursuits is in effect kicking, quote-unquote, at the Torah. This is what is meant by the words Bechol Toshia Nitgala. This is why the Torah asks us not only to refrain from what is forbidden, but to refrain from and to suppress desires of these, as these might ultimately lead us to violate what is forbidden outright. Considerations such as this led our sages to formulate the slogan Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutar Lach. So this is what the Nachmanides was teaching: satisfy yourself by refraining from that which is permitted to you. Anyone who deliberately separates himself from such urges is described as holy. The Torah applies this flattering description to the Nazir who undertook to abstain from intoxicating drink, from wine and all grape products, as well as from contact with ritual impurity, and who lets his hair grow to show that he is doing this. The Torah writes concerning such a person, holy shall he be, the growth of his hair on his head shall grow. So just as such a Nazir is holy, the Israelites on Mount Sinai were holy, as we know from Exodus 19:6, and you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. The Israelites were commanded to be holy in order that they should separate themselves from the cravings of this world. So he's similar to Nachmani's approach. I feel like he expands it. He brings more depth and more detail. But the idea of Kedusha, of sanctity, again, is to elevate by taking that which is also permitted and to, but again, within the way Rabbi Bachai is laying it out for us, is here we really are made, we're composed of these two sides, and the goal is to really to go take and elevate the physicality and to really favor the soul side of our being, and through that's what it means to be holy, to then push ourselves and to elevate and to take everything that we do, and to it should be leaning towards and favoring and really empowering the soul side of our being. Okay, so we have Rashi, who gives us the reading of Kedusha. Sanctity comes from Inyanim, issues of that are related to the sexuality side. Nachmani says it's much broader. And then Rabbeinu Bachai, from the school of Nachmani's, I feel like he expands it, gives us more depth, but he's really like saying to us that, because if you say Kadesh, it just to take Nachmani's alone without this backdrop that Rabbeinu Bachai is giving us, okay, so I should be a person that does things in moderation. But what Rabbeinu Bachai is giving us here is he's expanding it for us, and he's telling us, but why? Why is it that I care about that type of approach? And the answer is because we need to understand who we are. We're made up of these two forces. We're a physical being, similar to the animals, but we're also these spiritual beings, similar to the angels. So you have these two very much, and then with Adam's sin, it became all really meshed together. And so now, Kedoshim to you, and what Rabbeinu Bachai is telling us is that this connects to when we were standing at Mount Sinai. God said to us, "You're a holy people. You're a Kedoshim. We're holy." And so the idea is then when we approach these things, taking Rabbeinu Bachai's is why are we looked and tasked to sanctify that which is permitted to us? Because what we're really looking at is I need to feed my soul. I need to elevate my soul, so that even the way he explained it is, even when I'm eating, if I'm eating, it's to feed the soul. Is again, all of the physical activity that I do is in context of empowering the soul side of our being. And so the Torah prescribes for us many different mitzvot that, you know, if we follow them and keep in mind what we're trying to achieve. So that's bringing us back to like, okay, I want to sanctify even that which is mutter to me, that which is permitted to me. But how do, like, what am I leaning towards? Or like, how do I perceive things? How do I look at things? How do I approach things? But when I understand that the reason what I'm doing here is because I'm trying to accomplish this, this task of feeding my soul, so to speak, right? So then when I do the mitzvot also, I'm always thinking about, okay, yeah, this is permitted. I went to a butcher who gives me, you know, the best, most kosher meat possible, right? Or, you know, go down the list of different things that, but how do I, now that I have that, I've gone through that rigmarole of getting the thing that's quote unquote permitted. But now in order to take it to the next level, how am I going to use that? It has to be used towards making, empowering, and feeding my soul. And so that's kind of like Kedoshim to you. It's an extra level. It's the key to the whole It's like if you don't do that, you've missed the whole point of the exercise. And so Rabbeinu Bachai is giving us like this bigger view point of Kedoshim to you. Like, what are we doing this for? And therefore it falls in line with, you know, what it is that we're you know, it gives us the driver, so to speak, of what's behind all of these things. And so once I have that framework, then then it's like, oh, okay, let me think. As I do this, you know, is that going to be feeding my soul? Am I gonna, you know, or is it because I'm feeding my physical desires? And so when I look at that as my as the way to kind of my scale of assessing, my assessment is going to be based on this approach, then I think it really like makes it kind of easier in terms of understanding, like, okay, am I getting it right or am I getting it wrong? And so then you go back, oops, then you go back to the text of the parsha. It kind of like, you know, you start to see like all these different things that are being laid out. So within these things, you know, and there's other, what becomes even more interesting is that it adds in the idea of leket, right here, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not fully reap the corner of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. That's this idea of tzedaka. Like when you're a farmer, you need to leave over things for the poor. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you collect the fallen individual grapes from your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. So we just talked about like ourselves vis-a-vis God, doing things that are going to favor our soul as opposed to the physical desires. But then it expands it here to also how we treat others. That also that you know, how we speak of others, we saw mention of. But so like it's within that, we start with the base, the spiritual, feeding that over the physical. What's driving me is my spiritual side. And so then within that, an amazing thing that I saw from the Chaban, he talks about that there's a need for us to delve deeper and deeper into the understandings of Torah, and that those who are able to do that, one of the outgrowths is our desire. We connect to all humanity, specifically to other Jews, on the deepest level, looking for the goodness of all people. And there's a certain love that will come out, that will have a love for all and see the oneness and the connectivity of all beings, specifically, again, the children of Israel, when we get deeper and deeper into the understanding of Torah. So here, to apply that here, I would say like this. Rabbeinu Bachai is saying to us, what does it mean to be holy? So we saw Rashi, we saw Nachmanides, that he says we should be sanctifying that which is mutter, which is permitted to us. And then Rabbeinu Bachai is adding another element that's saying it's more than that. It's that as I do these things, I'm cognizant, I'm aware of, I'm looking to make sure that my soul is that which is being serviced and is being taken care of through these acts. And that when I do things, if it's not that way, then it's not being done properly. To be holy is to be making sure that as I do and as I act in all of my activities, where the way I think, the way I speak, the way I do physical things, it's all to be geared towards feeding my soul. But as to take this to teaching one step further is as I connect to these and understand Torah on the deepest level, also what comes out of it is a desire also to make sure that all of the people that I'm connecting with are also taken care of in a proper way. And the outgrowth of that is proper behavior, being, you know, cognizant of those who are in need and protecting those who are vulnerable, and obviously to act properly, not to steal. It goes on here. Don't, you shall not deny falsely, and like all this behavior. And then, so that goes back and forth, but the driver is this idea of our being, doing our activities based on our always being worried, concerned with, are we feeding, are we doing it for the side of ourselves that is the holy side, the spiritual side, as opposed to the mundane, base level, physical, animalistic side of ourselves. And then you read through this chapter, it's like you see this idea, the sensitivity. You shall not go around as a gossip monger amidst your people. You shall not stand by shedding of your fellow's blood. I am the Lord. Right? You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your fellow, but you shall not bear a sin on his account. Right? So you see this idea of the sensitivity, and it's just like all flows. You shall neither take revenge from you nor bear a grudge against the members of your people. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So this idea of Kedoshim Tiyu, within the Rabbeinu Bachai's understanding, it takes us and it just like flows through all these things that we're going to do here is, connecting to that side of ourselves, the elevated side. And from that, the more elevated and more connected we are to that, the more sensitivity we'll be able to express to all these things. Will just be a natural flow of loving your neighbor like yourself because of the elevated type of existence that we're able to access. So there it starts from Kedoshim to you, be holy. And then the way Rabbeinu Bachai is explaining it is be connected to your spiritual self. And that from there, I see like it's like a natural outgrowth of the flow of the parsha.
It's almost like the 12-step program of holiness, right? Like you build a foundation, and you each thing kind of adds and growth it makes sense.
Yep. But it's also like, I think it's like just to go over again, this Rabbeinu Bachai, like it's like you read it. He's really like, you would think at first he's just telling us exactly what the Ramban said. It's like, it sounds very similar. It sounds like we're just getting more Nachmanides. Sanctify yourself with that which is permitted to you. But it's much more. He's expanding. He's opening it up. And when you look at it on that, here's the equation. it's like, am I feeding my soul? Am I not feeding my soul? Am I doing it, in that way? Then all of these things, and then taking the Chabad's teaching of the deeper you connect to the Torah's deepest meanings will bring you to a place of where you're only going to want the best for others as well. It's not just limited to our own, but you're able to then become elevated to that point where you see the godliness in others, I think. That's kind of like part of what happens. And naturally, you're gonna, first of all, you just want to see everything, all of creation to be elevated in that way. So, I think it's just like
I look at it also like you know, there's a lot of talk about doing things by rote. Mm-hmm. As you do things because you have to do them, and you do the, you get up in the morning, you daven, are you doing it? Are you davening because you have to daven, or are you davening because you feel it? And I think this speaks to that, like doing it by rote's not enough.
Correct. But even more so, like you see, on davening, there's another element I would add in to this point, and on top of it is the added point is that we don't really, the problem of the equation is that I think most of us don't feel that when we daven, it makes a difference. But the reality is that it does, and that the more that we are, like you say, not doing it by rote, but rather, so when we're doing it completely, with proper focus and intent, the impact it has on everything is beyond comprehension. But we don't really internalize that. That's the challenge. Like we don't realize we don't realize that, you know, what kind of impact and or how integral our prayer and actions are on the universe. And so, and it's like everybody, I don't think anybody, you know, most people just, we're so numb that we don't necessarily sense the impact, but the teachings are clear that, that's the case. And that it goes from the beginning of time when God like created the world, nothing was working until Adam showed up and started praying. Like there's something missing. He prays and like the ecosystem starts working. So like to your point, like, yes, inspired, right? To be, you know, excited to do and to do it with, you know, with vigor. So that's like, right. And it's not easy. But I think also, like, part of the problem is, and I am saying for myself, like, I see, like, you just, like, we went to the Kotel this afternoon, my son, before he was leaving, so we went for Mincha. And I was davening there, and I'm thinking, you know, we don't really feel like that, you know, it's something that we have to fight to say to ourselves, like, when I daven, it makes a difference. And so, like, we have to constantly remind ourselves of that. And if you really internalize that, then you're like, I'm not going to like daydream. I'm going to be focused. I'm like, I'm going to be in the zone. Like, okay, every word I say now is vital that I'm like focused on it and concentrating and saying it, that I'm speaking to God and all that. So it's a very big challenge. I feel like the overall world that we live in today, the real issue is that there's been a degradation of the greatness of man. Right, there's just, it's just like completely, like, you know, it's like there's a complete breakdown in everything. Part of it is like tied to this idea that we don't appreciate how lofty, like what Rabbeinu Bachai is saying, like we are extremely lofty. Our potential is so high in terms of our loftiness, angelic side of ourselves, but it's been, you know, the negative side of this, of the energies of are saying the opposite, you know? So I feel like today needs to be, and it's such a hard concept to really get through to people, even to internalize ourselves. It's very, very hard. So, but that's
there's a lot of noise out there to get through.
Correct. Exactly. So that is our job, but I think the Rabbeinu Bachai really helps open it up. Something worth like thinking a lot about, and to like maybe even like take it like to even maybe come back to this and just work on developing it more in like in terms of practical steps, you know, like, okay, so let's practically apply these ideas. But it's definitely a good starting point, what it means to be an elevated people. We're holy people. This is what holiness is. These are the steps to get there, that kind of thing. All right.
Very good.
Yep.
Thank Very
you.
Inspirational. Now I
got to
strive even harder.
I know. Listen, I put it out there. So we think I'm talking to myself too. Not easy. Yep. Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you.